Hey, serious privacy enthusiasts. Ready to ace your AI data privacy game?
Oh, you bet, Kay. Dive into the world of TrustArc's Nemity Research, your go-to for staying on top of regulatory developments in AI and privacy.
Seriously, Nemity Research maintains a massive privacy and regulatory database featuring expert guidance and analysis from legal and privacy pros.
So save time on privacy research, cut your compliance timeline, and reduce costs with Nemity Research.
Get your regulatory research and insights at your fingertips with a free trial.
So get ahead in privacy compliance and start that free trial today. Go to trustarc.com/nimity-free-trial.
You're listening to Serious Privacy by TrustArc. Please welcome our hosts, Paul Breitbarth and Kay Royal.
The development of always connected mobile devices has fundamentally changed the global banking system. Where before, in many parts of the world, people were devoid of having a bank account, nowadays a smartphone gives them access to financial services wherever they are. Apple, Google, Alibaba, WeChat, and many others offer easy mobile payments either via an NFC-based chip or QR codes. And then we are not even talking about cryptocurrencies, digital household applications, or fully virtual banks. Our guest today is the DPO for Klarna, Europe's biggest fintech unicorn, valued at over $10 billion. Philip Jonsén is a seasoned DPO who, prior to Klarna, worked for Säpo, the Swedish security services, as well as Sandvik, a high-tech and engineering company. And let's not forget, Philip is also a colleague of ours, co-hosting his own privacy podcast Dataministeriet, together with Anders Backström. My name is Paul Breitbart.
And I'm Kay Royal, and welcome to Serious Privacy. I'm absolutely thrilled to have our guest today, but frankly, when am I not thrilled to have our guest? I absolutely love the people that come on our podcast, but I really am excited for the one today. I think this is going to be fascinating and you're going to love it. So we're going to first get into the unexpected question. Now, Philip, were you ready for the unexpected question?
Yes, I'm ready.
Today is, what is your motto?
My motto?
Yeah.
Wow, that's very hard. I would say family first.
Love it. Family first.
Yes.
And do you have a big family?
Well, it both. My own family is one wife and two children.
Love it.
And then I have a mother that I'm taking care of to cover them, my brother right now with the COVID situation. She can't go out and so on.
Very nice. Very nice. Paul, what about you? Your motto?
I don't really have a motto, to be honest.
See, I really got Paul.
Yeah, and I don't want to be as boring as seize the day or live free or die. And
carpe diem.
I do have another motto as well.
Oh, tell us.
Go ahead, Philip. Go ahead. Gives me time to
think.
Yeah,
because another thing I usually say is privacy never sleeps.
Ah,
absolutely
see?
True.
I like it.
I'll go for always expect the unexpected.
Okay. Does it have special meaning for you?
No, this is the first thing that comes to mind.
All right.
So how about you?
Mine is live out loud. It is a phrase from the Lupus Foundation of America. It is essentially directed towards people with hidden diseases to live out loud. I've adopted it and adapted it to other parts of my life to mean be who you are, be comfortable being who you are, identify who you are, and be who you are out loud, live out loud. And I bring that to work, sometimes to most people's chagrin, and to everything else. I definitely live out loud. I am who I am. I'm comfortable with who I am. And unless someone's a serial killer, I would say, please, live out loud.
Very nice. So let's turn to privacy, since apparently it never sleeps. Philip B., can you tell us a bit more before we go into the whole privacy and finance discussion? What does Klarna actually do for those of our listeners who are not familiar with the company?
Oh, that's a very good question, actually, because some may think of Klarna as a neobank or a fintech or something along that way. But in fact, we are aiming for being your true shopping friend, like your best friend when it comes to shopping. You don't need to carry bags because you can track all deliveries in our app.
Very good.
a little bit of selling. But of course, we have a banking license as well, and so on.
And that comes with lots of personal data, and that is where you get involved, right?
Yeah, right. So as you mentioned, we are one of the biggest neobanks in the industry, along with some others, of course, great colleagues and competitors that makes us better every day. And a lot of consumer data. And as we grow, also, of course, a lot of employee data. And not to forget, actually, contact data of merchants and partners and other persons. So it's I think it's easy to forget sometimes that you focus so much on consumers and maybe your employees. And then all of these contact data, it's like no one cares. But we actually really care about whoever the data belongs to or is connected to.
Because those would not just be the big web shops, but also smaller companies that do some online deliveries.
Yeah, it could be anyone. Yeah, you know, we all have our business emails and addresses, and you would be really annoyed if you all of a sudden got a lot of spam. So you should take care of all personal data, not only consumer personal data.
So how does privacy work in a financial startup? Klarna doesn't exist for that many years yet. Has this been an issue from the start? Have you been involved from the start? Or is this something that was more discovered later on?
I would say Klarna, I didn't join until 3.5 years ago, approximately. Term that is actually quite long. And I have no intention at all to leave Klarna because it's the best place to be. I really encourage everyone to join us and apply for a position because it's so fun. It's so fast.
Well, I've seen your headquarters. They are amazing.
Yeah, and it's like the most interesting data protection questions you will ever get. But now I lost track of your question. Yeah. Not from the very beginning, of course, because no startup starts with privacy. They start with a business idea. And so, of course, the business idea was to make payments smooth online. So that's what they worked on. And then, not that long afterwards, they actually recruited one of Sweden's top privacy lawyers to head a small privacy office, basically. So it's been a core value for very long time. In Klarna terms, a very long time is 9-10 years.
When you say that they hired a privacy attorney and they face unusual questions, I don't want to get too much into anything that might be confidential, but what makes Klarna different?
From the privacy perspective.
From the privacy perspective. Sorry about that. What makes Klarna different from the privacy perspective?
I think that, as I said, they started really, really early, long before the GDPR, with journey to have it incorporated in business processes, in the employees' minds. There's a lot of awareness campaigns. So it's so much more than only like having a written internal instruction. This is how you should do it. And it's been like that for a very long time. I think that's something that distinguishes us from many other companies.
So what would be the draw for consumers? I mean, do they see your privacy perspective and approach up front? Or is this something more that, I don't even know how to phrase this.
That is a good question because...
Yeah.
No, but I think because we are currently working on exactly that topic. And
right.
Yes, this year we have kind of relaunched our privacy landing page online because it used to be written by us lawyers, but now it's written email off. But the privacy notice is still written by lawyers, like the formal text,
right,
where we describe all all the necessary parts of who is the controller, the kind of boring stuff that no one reads except us.
Right. Nobody likes it's to read privacy notices.
No. So this it's fairly long. I think it's about 16, 17 pages, and it covers everything we do. But then
very
this
thorough.
Year, yeah, it is. I think it's, I'm quite impressed by our privacy notice. I didn't write it. A colleague of mine, an excellent guy. But anyway, so what happened this year is that communication took an initiative to look at our landing page and like, oh no, this is not good enough. This is hard to digest, not fun to read. Basically boring, and no one will ever read it. Yeah, it's a little bit, I mean, not exactly, but so currently, if you go into our landing page about data protection or privacy, it starts off with a video. It's animated, and it describes on a very high level, like, what we do with data in a slightly fun way, and then there's, like, boxes with the most interesting topics for you as a consumer. And so it's a constant work with doing it more accessible. And of course, if you are a privacy lawyer or very interested, then you can read this formal text as well. And this is something that we are constantly working in. But I think that's also something that distinguishes from other companies. We truly have like a customer obsession in everything we do, not only the online purchase experience. It's wherever you touch base with Klarna, it should be the best experience for you. So if you touch base with us regarding a privacy question, it should be the best customer experience you can have. So on that topic, what we're doing right now, I think I'm allowed to share it. And that is, these are, when you get a copy of your data that we hold. Now the communication has started working on that one because, of course, you got everything we had on you up until now, but it had been produced by a lawyer and technical staff. So it didn't, I mean, it's not pretty. I still think it's better than most because I, similar to you, probably have asked for a lot of extracts from different companies and organizations, and most is not that good. I am very proud of our. It covers a lot, and it's layered. So some things that we don't think that most people are interested in, it says, like, if you really want copies of every single invoice, please just tell us and you will have it. So we kind of made a layered approach. And now comms will add their magic to it to make it much nicer. That's maybe also something that is so English Klarna. As you hear, it's not like in many companies, it might be lawyers, compliance, a little bit of engineers, but in Klarna, it's everyone works with privacy.
I'm actually really happy to see that you have done a video. It is something that I've been advocating when I'm teaching for quite a while, that privacy notices don't always have to be just in writing, but that you can become creative. And indeed, looking at the notice, apart from being very pink, but that is that is of course Klarna's color.
Hey, I like pink.
It looks really bright and accessible. And am I correct that for now it is just on the Swedish page, or have you already started to roll this out to other countries as well?
I don't remember. I think it's at least in the UK, if I remember correctly. And it will, of course, be rolled out in all our markets. I mean, we're not present in all markets. I think it's around 17 or 18 markets right now. So it's not that many. I mean, as you mentioned, I'm from Sandvik. I'm used to 170 markets.
Yes.
And I know that when I accessed it from our side, the video didn't pop up. So Paul sent me the link to that. So that's wonderful. So I really like that. So tell me then, and whether or not you've seen privacy notices or other companies take approaches that you just look at, you don't have to name the companies, but you look at it and you're like, oh, that's horrible. I mean, we all have our horror stories of some of these privacy notices that are just atrocious. Any of them particularly stand out, like I said, don't name companies, of something that was said or done in a privacy notice or sticks out that you're like, oh, heck no, we're not going down that route?
No, but I can mention the contrary, because I remember, and if anyone listens and can find it again for me, BBC used to have a video as well with like a funny guy in a velour suit. I think he was a little bit dancing. And I think that was like 6 years ago, but it stuck in my mind, so it worked. And I have tried to find it again without success.
Oh, that would be cool. So let's put our listeners on the hunt. Do you know of a privacy video of a guy in a velour suit dancing?
From the BBC.
Because clearly on BBC, apparently that stood out. Let's see if we can find this Easter egg somewhere out there. I'm sure someone can. The power of Google. I know that I've seen some.
In general, I think the privacy notices are becoming better and better.
They should be. And I think there's a lot more emphasis now on trying to get things down to a lower readability score. And most of the time, if you were to take a privacy notice, and I've done this for tons of clients and companies, take a privacy notice and drop it into a readability score. I think it's the Westler Kincaid, off the top of my head, I'm trying to think. And the number it comes out with is the grade level that equates to what you use. And do you know that most privacy notices I plug in come out with a 23 to 27 grade level? Do you know what that means? 12 is high school. So 23 is like two PhDs.
Wow.
To read a privacy notice. It makes no sense whatsoever. So what kind of tactics would you recommend that companies take to make their privacy notice more readable, other than, you know, giving it to a high schooler and saying, do you understand this?
So one thing quite funny thing is, actually, if you recall that the parliament suggested like having icons or something during the negotiation, I kind of publicly said, what a terrible idea, the worst. And all of a sudden now, like half a year ago, I'm like, this thing about icons, that's not bad.
So you actually came round to the idea.
I did, and I think that doing it more visual will help people. And then you can click on the icon to read the text, like the parts you're interested in, because you will never be interested in everything. You might be interested in like, okay, who will they share data with? Or what type of data is it they actually collect? Or who is the controller? Probably no one cares, but similar stuff. And then you could click, because if it's a long text only, then you have to read and find the parts that you're actually interested in. So, and I've seen that many companies now are trying to do this. I would not call it a layered approach, it's more like heading approach.
So Philip, you mentioned just before that working for Klarna gives you some of the most interesting challenges for privacy professionals that you could imagine. Could you give us an example of that?
Yes. I mean, it's not even hard to come up with examples, since being a bank, you're heavily regulated. So we have a ton of laws to take into consideration. And of course, the most recent is PSD2. How is that connected to GDPR? For example, they use similar terminology, sometimes even the same, but it means different things. Take consent, a hot topic during the GDPR implementation. Now it's not that hot anymore. But anyway, in PSD2, it's also consent-based. You can extract data from an account in an account information service based on the consent of the consumer or customer. That's not the same consent as in GDPR. There's different requirements. So those type of questions are really, really hard. And if you're not the lawyer, I would not even dare to enter this arena with same terminology meaning different things. Just an example. And another example, I think, is also explaining, it's not a very legal question, but going back to why privacy is not a question in Klarna, because we get a lot of customers asking, like, for how long do you keep data? Everyone is interested in the period of time. And being heavily regulated, there's, I don't know how many laws, I think it's like 20, 30 laws that stipulate we must keep data for a certain period of time. So it could be anti-money laundering, AML laws, it could be credit laws, bookkeeping laws. So there's so many legislations that say, like, keep data for 5 years, keep this data for 7 years, keep this data for 10 years. And then the consumer asks, like, yeah, can you please delete my data? Right to be forgotten. And we say, no, we can't.
Yeah.
And then it's more of a pedagogical question that's really interesting. How do you explain that to someone that wants you to delete the data? The difference between deleting data and not using data. Because, of course, we can't use the data for most purposes, except those according to the legislation. Yeah, that's a tough question. And which one thing I always try to remind myself of is that I'm really like privacy savvy and also a little bit tech savvy. Most people don't even care. So describing something very complicated to someone that is like briefly interested, like my wife, she doesn't even understand why Klarna pays me for doing what I do. She really don't care.
I'm so sorry. I have to laugh at that, Philip, because of course my family always hears me talking privacy and law, and they couldn't care less, really, seriously.
Yeah, exactly. It's so interesting. And we should never forget that most people are not like us. Most people are a little bit interested.
What is wrong with them?
I don't know. But they are probably interested in, like, they don't want to be the victim of ID theft or stuff like that.
Right.
In that sense, they do care. But they don't care about the trusted custodians. If you trust the company, right. I'm just going to make some company up. H&M, large retailer in Sweden and globally. If you trust H&M, then you will not read the privacy notice. You trust they will take care of your data. So I think that's something we need to, and of course, H&M, if you're an employee, you might not trust them right now, but referring to the H&M case in Germany.
Yes, of course, that's a big case.
All contrary, it's the best time ever to be employee in H&M, because they will probably never again do anything wrong with employee data.
No, I would assume so. But still, it had to come to this stage, and there will probably still be a bit of a legal battle before this sanction from the Hamburg DPA is finalized. For those who haven't seen it, we'll put a link in the show notes to read about this case. Yeah. Philip, you're not just a DPO. You are also a podcaster. You're also a teacher. And trying to, well, as I've referred to it also on the podcast in the past, to spread the gospel of privacy. So what are you currently working on? What fun episodes of the podcast are coming up? What other things are coming up? Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. If you forgot author, because I wrote the book before GDPR about how to implement GDPR for the IAPP. So you can still purchase it if you want to. I think it's and what I'm always working on is what I actually wrote in my introduction part of that book. And what I'm most interested in is actually culture and history and data protection, like differences in different countries, different regions, how the US perceive privacy from an individual perspective, how we think about it in Sweden, of course, a very strange approach, I think, and also the background history in the whole of Europe. I mean, it's still only 60-70 years ago we had the World War II. It's even less since the Mauer came down. East and Western Europe were reunited. And I think that is really, really interesting to see. That's a lot of my thinking is going into looking in the crystal ball, following the case law right now to see where are we heading? Who will win this battle? Will it be German DPAs? Will it be CNIL in France? Of course, I had hoped for the UK, but now they are almost gone. So this, I think that's something I'm really following and trying to write something about. And I'm also writing another book, or actually two new books. One is coming out in February, I think, in the UK.
Oh, nice.
And then my friend Anders and myself are writing a data ministeriate book. In a weak moment, we promised to have it published around midsummer next year.
So we better midsummer, of course, being a very important day in Sweden.
It is most important.
So, what will the books be about?
I think that the first book is a data protection officer kind of manual, but it's how you actually do the trade of being a DPO. So it's not that much. It's a little bit of legal background, of course. But then it's more of how do you set up your privacy program? How do you do your first gap analysis? Quite a lot of like tips and tricks about things that I have a co-author, Sofia Edvardsson. We are both very experienced, or half experienced, depends who you compare yourself with. So we have gained a lot of, not knowledge, but how problems that we has came across and hopefully solved. And maybe like cliffhanger, we maybe even give you some examples where we got beaten and didn't solve it.
Interesting. Interesting. And the Data Ministeriet book?
Oh, that's...
That is summarizing your podcast.
So that's more of a fun project. I don't know if you've written books. It's not that fun, actually. It takes a lot of time. Your family doesn't like you. They are really angry because the pay per hour is lousy. So it will be more a fun book. So I'm writing stuff that I'm interested in, the things I just described, like how will this ever solve the data protection? How will it ever be solved in the global world? Yes.
That sounds really cool. I haven't written any books yet, but Kay doesn't know this yet, but I do have a book lined up for us to write.
Of course. Ooh, we do.
Yes, I'll tell you more about that at some future meeting. But this is not for the public yet.
Is it privacy or something completely else?
No, it is privacy. Okay. It is privacy.
I was going to say, it's probably not vampires and dragons and werewolves that I like to read about. It's probably something eminently practical in privacy.
I'm afraid it is.
So I can reveal something. No one actually knows this. I never told anyone.
Tell us.
I will tell you. Because I've been writing almost my whole life. I was really lousy in school. I mean, people really don't trust me or believe me, but I was not a good student. I was lousy.
I can sympathize with that.
All of a sudden, I started to write because I discovered something called like via Oscar Wilde, like aphorisms or short sentences. And I started writing like short sentences with a message. And all of a sudden I discovered it. I can do this. I couldn't do geography and whatever. That's like, don't ask me about rivers in Russia or in Europe. I will not know the name. But I did write these short sentences with a message. I actually got published quite a few times in the newspapers. I think around when I was around 17 years old. And then, so this is what I haven't told anyone, because obviously it's what's in the newspaper, so I want, that's public. But I sent in a manuscript to three different publishers, and they all refused me.
That's too bad.
Yeah, but...
Have you reread the manuscript yourself and considered re-editing it and resubmitting?
No. I started studying law instead. And
because I know sometimes that's a thing. You should do that. You should go back and review it and see if there is something else. Why do I get the feeling he's not going to go back and review that and see? Because, you know, that happens sometimes. People pick up things that they wrote years and years ago, and they're like, oh, you know what? With the experience I have now, I could completely make this better.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
I don't think Philip sounds very enthused about that.
Well, maybe just the memory is sufficient. And there are other books now, so... That's also something to look forward to. So, will exactly. I mean, the DPO book is in English. You said it comes out in the UK. English, or will that also be in English?
Swedish, but I know a great online translation tools. I will not mention anyone on a specific, but you can run it in one of those. You can purchase it midsummer next year. We started out with a front page.
You know, there are so many things running through my head about finance and privacy and doing business with other countries. So I think I'm going to settle on the doing business with other countries. So since you're a startup, and I love the pink, and you're in you're overseas from me, is there any particular countries that are offering challenges to you that made you decide not to do business in those countries, or really, really made you change your business model?
No, not really. But since you are based in Arizona, I guess I would mention the US, because your privacy landscape with all the state laws popping up all over the place, being slightly different. It's almost like we had prior to GDPR. Like, you saw resemblances among the EU member states implementing the directive, but different stuff. And now, of course, there's been so much focus on the CCPA in California. But since we are doing business in not only California, and also the Californian law is like, you would probably sell to Californian residents anyway. So I think the US will be very interesting to follow. And what we've seen is also much larger interest from our partners, merchants, and so on, when it comes to data protection and privacy. That was not on the table a couple of years ago when you spoke to US people. I don't know if you agree with me.
I do, because I'd like to think from the US perspective that, you know, quite often the world says we don't have privacy laws, but we really do. And especially in the financial market, we have pretty strong privacy laws. And not only California, but the New York cybersecurity, the New York is pretty strong.
Yeah.
Especially on finance, aside from the federal laws. And so I like that you're actually saying, you know what, U.S. would be really interesting, because, I don't think interesting is a word that's usually applied to us.
No, but you also, I mean, we don't target children at all, but you have COPPA as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a lot to take take into consideration, especially being a finance institution, because you have old laws about data protection or privacy when it comes to finance.
Right.
A good challenge. And that's what we like as privacy professionals.
Yeah. I want to get back to Philip Moore. If you weren't doing this startup in finance, what would you be doing?
Oh, like if I'm not a lawyer at all.
Yeah, let's go with that. If you weren't a lawyer at all, what would you be doing?
So one thing, and I think Paul knows this, that I'm extremely interested in making things with my hands, like carpeting, with wood. Manufacturing stuff, recycling, reuse stuff. And my latest interest is that I will probably purchase a very old car. It's a Jaguar XJS V12, and that needs to be restored. So I will learn how to weld and stuff. So that I will do something with my hands.
I love cars, powerful engines, and ghosts. I admit, I have that love myself. Mm. Oh, that is fascinating.
But do you love welding?
But I am not welding. I have rebuilt some engines, but I don't weld. You and I might have to get together and talk about some of these old cars and how we can rebuild them. That might be fun and totally different from privacy and finance.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually going, I'm going to look at this car on Saturday.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Now, see, Paul, why didn't we do a whole episode on fast cars?
Because we are a privacy podcast.
Oh, we can keep that private. It's okay.
Yeah. I guess, Kay, the solution is that you come over next year to Europe in September for the Nordic Privacy Arena, which by then will be face-to-face again, and then you can meet Philip in person and see wonderful Stockholm. How about
you know,
that?
I have never heard of the Nordic Privacy Arena, so that is now on my goal. I'm going to make it to the Nordic Privacy Arena.
Yeah, it should be on your bucket list.
It's one of the best conferences.
Yeah, that sounds fat. I'm already putting it on my calendar. I'm just going to go ahead and make it happen. So I love it. But no, Philip, this has been absolutely fascinating because finance is not a topic that a lot of people get into. And we've touched particularly on the topic of startups.
I have one. And that's another one that's been bugging me a little since I read your resume, Philip. And I don't know why we haven't spoken about this previously. But how does somebody get from being a DPO for the secret police to working for one of the largest mining companies in the world to ending up at a fintech startup? How did you choose your next companies?
Well, it is a good question, but I actually never planned my life. It sounds strange to most lawyers, but I always tend to go by the feeling, my gut feeling, like, okay, this is fun right now. And then I search for the next challenge. And some people ask me, or a lot of people ask me, how do you find time to do everything you do? I just do. That's the thing. I don't plan.
Mm-hmm.
I just act all the time. So I remember when I did actually apply for the position at the secret police, as you call it. Let's call it that. And I think since I am really enthusiastic, otherwise I would never apply for a position. And I think that comes through. So I've been fortunate to get a few assignments or jobs that I really wanted. Mm. Currently, you get that I love Klarna. I think it's like such an exciting place to be. And if I stop loving it one day, then I will think again and go back to myself, like, what do I want to do now? Because I haven't planned for any out from the company. I only plan to be where I am right now.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the best approach. Go with your heart.
Yeah.
Another nice motto. Philip, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show today. For all the listeners that haven't yet, go and listen to Data Ministeriet. We'll put a link in the show note. And it is not just episode in Swedish. This week's episode or last week's episode is actually with Eduardo Ustaran, who you may all well know. There are episodes on South Africa with Trevor Hughes. So lots of English episodes to listen to as well. And they're really fun. Yes, there's one with me as well. I talk for a very long time. That's certainly what I recall from our session recording in Sweden back in January.
Paul never believed that.
Go listen to Data Ministeriet. If you like our series, please do tell your friends and colleagues about us, rate and review us in your favorite podcast apps. And if you have any questions or suggestions, reach out to us via seriousprivacy@trustark.com or via Twitter @podcastprivacy. You will find Kay on Twitter as Heart of Privacy and myself as Europol B. Thank you for listening to this week's episode, and until our next one, goodbye.
Bye, y'all.
That was Serious Privacy.
Hey listeners, looking to navigate the realm of responsible AI data privacy governance? Well, look no further.
Absolutely. TrustArc is paving the way, offering a complete approach to managing privacy risks in the world of AI.
TrustArc allows organizations to confidently use AI with personal or sensitive data, moving forward efficiently and cost-effectively.
And here's the kicker. Protect your company and data with TrustArc's privacy-driven compliance software.
Because their deep automation streamlines data privacy governance, cutting your time to compliance with automated data mapping, risk assessments, and regulatory reporting.
TrustArc's enhancements go way beyond that, helping organizations understand AI better and align cross-functionally on data governance, privacy, and security.
Plus, they provide guidance on privacy governance for AI and how to mitigate risks using frameworks like NIST AI, OECD AI, and the NIMACY Privacy Management Accountability Framework.
If you're aiming for compliance excellence, check out Privacy Central, seriously one of my best parts. It uses automation and privacy expertise to understand your requirements, build and manage your privacy program with ease.
Oh, I agree. Privacy Central is your go-to to measure your progress toward responsible AI data compliance.
Stay ahead with TrustArc's Privacy Central. Visit TrustArc.com now. Ask me and Paul if you have any questions.